Now you have a table.
So I can put my water on it.
Okay. It's even better.
All right, the first question comes from Fabienne.
Good morning, Fabienne Kepler-Chevreux. Two questions. The first one on the cost of fresh, easy and affordable. I remember it was 1.5 million per store. But Jeff, in what you showed, it was 1.8 million, so 20%, because you gave 290 million for 160 stores for 2007. So I was wondering why the cost increased by 20% per store. And the second question will be regarding the top line. Historically, we used to compare Deleuze USA and Ahold USA at the advantage of Deleuze. I was wondering if now that Kevin is responsible for Ahold USA, should we expect Ahold USA to be a bit more top line focused or to report better like for like in the future?
Should I answer the capital first? Yeah. I think on average, we still expect those types of numbers for the total program. It just so happens that in 2017, we've got some of the more expensive refurbishments that we'll be doing. So we have a more expensive batch in 2017. But over the life of the whole program, the numbers haven't changed significantly.
The batch for 2017 is having a little bit more lifetime than the previous ones. So that's why it needs a little bit more capital. The overall number of 1.5 was exactly hit on the dot for Charlotte, and will also, in total average of the programs, will be the number. Which, as we already said in the beginning, the 1.5 million is roughly half maintenance, which is some backlog, and the rest is in new proposition and shopping experience.
On your other question, it's clear that we have been both focusing on driving sales growth. I showed that also in my presentation. If you look at the Northeast program of Ahold USA, it's clearly also focusing on volume growth. It was 1.1% over the first 9 months of the first three quarters. The markets are different, so don't forget the positioning Ahold has in their markets today. Is strong market share positions in the Northeast, as well in New England, as well in Carlisle and Landover, of course, is more difficult to grow so fast, and with different capital expenditures and Food Lion, clearly that has supported the growth of Food Lion over the last couple of years, and that's why I see a difference in comparable sales growth of the two banners. Fact of Kevin arriving at Ahold USA, we'll see next year. He's getting his hands now around our business, the old Ahold business there. But certainly the view James and Kevin had both about the business is not so different. So I wouldn't anticipate a big change on that.
Good morning, Bruno from Bernstein. Two questions for me, please. Looking at the 1 billion euro share buyback program and all the guidance, it doesn't look like your leverage will increase next year. It's either flat or slightly down. Does that mean you're keeping some leeway to potentially increase the buyback program during the year, like in the past? Second question is the 1.6 billion free cash flow for next year, if you use your resilient margins, a bit of working capital, that almost would imply a small reduction in underlying profitability. So does that cover a margin reduction or not? Because most people would say it's 1.7 if you continue from this year.
Yep.
Thank you.
On the 1 billion, yeah, it implies relatively stable leverage into 2017. So I'm sure you've either done the math or you'll do the math later, but it doesn't imply that we're increasing our leverage much above two. It implies we're keeping it around those levels. So on the second question was the
cash flow.
The cash flow is after the one-off costs, and so we still incur significant one-off costs next year. By the way, I don't think you can do the maths quite as easily as saying the difference is operating profit. There's a lot of other different moving parts in it. But clearly, we still have significant one-off costs. If I look at the Bloomberg, for example, there's estimates of around 1.7, I think, is the number on there. But I believe that it's an underlying cash flow number. So it doesn't include, I think the number we showed was well over 100 million of one-off costs next year.
Okay. In the corner here, James. But Mike's coming in.
Did I win?
Yeah, you did. Go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry, Rob, you've already gone. Three questions. Stuart McGuire from Credit Suisse. Three questions from me.
You speak about the USA businesses as separate businesses almost. Do you have any plans to actually integrate those businesses under one umbrella? Question number two, on own label in the US, we're seeing own label penetration decline, but you're talking about own label actually getting better. What is it about your offer and the markets you're operating in that help you win on the own label side? And number three, question on Peapod. Can you give us an idea of the number of pod passes percentages in your customer base and how that affects your basket size, which seems to be reasonably high relative to others? Thank you.
Thank you for your question. Maybe, Frans, you can take the integration. We just announced a retail business integration, so maybe you'd share something, Hanneke, something about Peapod. And our own brands, we still see increased penetration of own brands in the US. That is also because we have been focusing a lot of our business on it. So we have been seeing more penetration of own brands.
On the organizational part of the question regarding the US business for ourselves, first of all, I think from the strategy framework, it is very clear that we are excited about the great local brands. And those are all the brands in the US. Which we are going to support now with this retail business services as from the 1st of January. So that's already a shared approach to service those brands and to support those brands even stronger. And for the moment now, we said we keep Ahold USA and Delhaize America separate until we have a better idea in a potential next step.
And right. As for Peapod, on the Pod Pass, we only started it as a pilot about a year ago with very little fanfare, but we have about 15% of our sales going through Pass members now. We think there's definite upside there. Of course, we were worried about the basket, but what we're seeing is that the basket's only very slightly down, and Peapod has a very large basket. In fact, average of $160 is our basket average. That was only very slightly down, whereas the frequency was up very significantly. So all in all, that makes for a very attractive subscription proposition.
Thank you. Neil?
Okay. Sorry, got my... Rob Joyce from Goldman Sachs. Just a couple of areas. One, just to clarify, on the impact of online in the Netherlands margin, is that saying that all things being equal, the Netherlands margin would be down 60 bips next year? Apologies if I got the wrong end of the stick there.
Yeah, no, what we're saying is currently the dilutive impact is around 60 basis points, and we expect it to remain at about 60 basis points from Bol. Yeah. That's not from all online. We don't really talk about the dilutive impact of our food delivery because we see that as Hanneke said, an integral part of the food offering. But the impact from Bol has grown. If we go back in, I think when we started, it was about 20 basis points, 25. Then we said we'd increase some investments. That raised it to 50 basis points. But because of the size of the Bol growth, we're at about 60 basis points of dilution today, and that will continue into 2017 at that rate.
Got you. Thanks a lot. Sorry for misunderstanding that. Mm-hmm. Second one, just in terms of thinking about the long-term capex of the business, looking at the US depreciation rate, I mean, it seems to be around 3%-ish of sales, which looks higher than maybe where global peers would be and the other bits of your business. Is there any reason that could come down or...?
The depreciation?
As a percentage of sales in the US, it's much higher.
The capex investment or the...
In terms of if you're going to do capex equivalent to depreciation, if the depreciation falls.
The 3%.
I think we'll continue to invest at similar levels. I mean, we'll invest as we need to support the businesses. The key thing about the business model is it gives us those options. We're throwing off enough cash that there's no need for us to... not invest to keep our stores young, keep our stores exciting. And at 1.8 billion, which is about 3% of sales, that's a reasonable level. It's around one times depreciation. So I think that's a reasonable level to be thinking of going forward. But it depends on the needs of the business. And at the same time as we're making the investments, you've got to remember we have set ourselves pretty tough return on capital targets for those individual investments. And I think, you know, if we can keep that focused return on capital mentality as we make the investments, You won't see a dilution to our current return on capital, and each of those investments should be accretive to value creation. So, you know, that's the way we think about it. I'm not going to give a forecast beyond 2017 for CapEx, but I think it's reasonable to think at 1x depreciation going forward is not an unreasonable level.
Thanks a lot.
Neil?
Thanks. It's Niamh McSherry, Deutsche Bank.
Oh, sorry.
Two questions, please. The first one is on the dividend payout ratio of 40 to 50%. I understand why you'd give yourself flexibility, but given the strength of your balance sheet, and I think consensus is for 50%, is there any reason why you shouldn't start off at the higher end of that range? That was the first question.
No, I think, you know, if you look at expectation and consensus, it is at the high end of the range. So I'm not going to give an announcement now of what our dividend will be for 2016 and 2017. We'll do that in the normal way, which we usually announce with the full year results in February. But logic would tell you we'd be at the high end of the range for sure.
Okay, thank you. And the second one is around online. The implied 20 to 25% growth, should we expect that to come from the three online businesses roughly equally, or anyone in particular?
Yeah, it's the future, so I can't give you exact numbers, but the majority of the growth will continue to come from those three big brands. The Delhaize brands in the portfolio are a lot smaller, percentage-wise, they might actually grow faster as we put, you know, our minds to them, but they start from a really small base. And between the big three, clearly Bull.com and AlbertHeijn.nl have been growing faster than Peapod. All three have been growing robustly, but they have been growing a little faster. In the short term, you might continue to expect that. What happens beyond that, we will see.
Okay, thank you.
James?
I think in the James or...
And then Sridhar.
It's James Grundage from Jefferies again. I had three. First of all, Dick, do you think on-label penetration in the US can get to a European level in a reasonable amount of time? If not, why not? Second one is, I appreciate you working on nuts and bolts, but if you start thinking about why shouldn't more Stop and Shop stores become Hannaford's through time, given that NPS and generally how strong the Hannaford's brand is in contiguous geographies? And the third one is, you've got a whole new suite of things that you're giving to Food Lion through multi-channel, some of the USA on labels, etc. Should be thinking about Food Lion maybe being a bit more ambitious in terms of brand positioning, because you've got a great pricing advantage. Probably you should start also aspiring at attracting a different type of customer, given what you have at your disposal now. I guess it's not for you, but.
Sounds like
so
it.
Maybe you take a Food Lion question. Yeah. On the first question, I think on the own brand penetration, it is clearly lower than in Europe. So if you look at the 50 versus 40, it's also the way we measure it. So we take the fresh bulk also, and when you sell it under a brand, we take it into own brands because it's our product at that moment. I think what you see in the US, that there will be always a higher penetration of brands because the size of the stores is bigger. So it's simple. What you do in the Netherlands or in Belgium with the smaller stores, you have less SKUs on the shelf, so you select more. And that makes it in the US easier to sell more brands because you have more space. That's why you always will have a lower penetration of own brands in the United States. On your second question on branding, of course, we are learning from each other what is the success criteria of a Hannaford store in the north of in Maine and New Hampshire versus our Stop & Shop brand in New England. These scores, by the way, are Hannaford stores in Maine and New Hampshire. They also had some overlap in our market in Stop & Shop in the Boston area. And there, of course, there also their NPS was lower. So it's really where the heart of Hannaford is. There they have very high NPS scores. So changing banners, that's not the first thing we are thinking about today. We really believe the brands are based in their territories and geographies. That's where they belong, and that's also where the banners are really paying off. We need to work further on building brands at Out USA, which we said also 2 years ago at the Northeast.
Sorry, can I just follow up on that? So if I look at the Boston Metro, is the Hannaford's NPS higher than a Stop and Shop? on overlapping DMAs?
Very little. There, the difference is not that big. So if you look at the Boston area, the MPS of Hanaford and Alt USA, so Stop and Shop, is not a big gap. It's big when you go through Maine and New Hampshire. And Alt once tried to go there, and we failed. So it's clear that Hanaford fought that territory very well in that market. Food Lion, Frans?
On Food Lion, James, there's a lot of activity going on in Food Lions. And the Charlotte 142 Extra was a next step, not only in remodeling stores, but also extra value in produce, new ranges in private label, complete new craft beer and wine selections, more knowledge about ready-made meals, dinner for tonight, and so on. So that's, within the box, a lot of things going on. The second thing is Hanaford Food Lion has a very strong program on digital. A very high share is going of sales is going through our MVP card. And we already very successful in all kind of couponing, Catalina programs, and the digital. And we got a brand new digital and website environment, which is first class. For next year, we see an even more extension in our digital program. And for reasons of competition, I would not say too much, but I think it will be mind-boggling successful. I'm very proud about that thing. And we test a few things with Instacart for a click and collect model. So we do a number of things there. I can tell you the people are very agile and not leaning back at all. And I think there's a big potential with the Food Lion brand, as we all know, well-positioned stores, well-priced, and the productivity has some room for extra sales.
Frans, just to follow up on that, I mean, do you consciously think that you can extend the appeal of the brand because of all the things that you're doing multi-channel? Is there something that you're proactively thinking about? Because Food Lion, demographics-wise, was a bit landlocked in the past, and presumably you can start changing that.
You mean extending the geography?
Meaning, do you think you can more go more front foot against the Harris Teeter, for example, rather than more than a Walmart?
I think, but look at if you look at the Charlotte area, this greater Charlotte 142 store, Charlotte in itself. Charlotte in itself is a very diverse city, where in the south, for example, you have quite high income, and in the north is lower income, and ethnicity-wise, completely different, completely two different worlds. And in both areas, we are very successful, and we are a very strong brand there. So I think we have the strength to extend our type of customers with all the assortment work we do, whilst we stick ourselves to the heritage strength of Food Lion. And we see also that we get more customers in very different areas of demography, income classes, ethnicity, and these kind of things. And that's, I think if you would compare the Food Lion brand now with 3 years ago, or not only how the stores looked at the shopping experience, the hygiene, the way we assort, the replenishment, the interactive way how people connect to you as a customer, plus all the changes in private label produce, meat, drinks, and deli, is a very different type of store, which is also appealing for a different type of customer group, which has more income. So it's, I think we do exactly those things, and we also see those effects. And the locations are so great, and the brand of Food Lion is very strong in the Carolinas, that you see more and more customers, hey, now the brand is offering me. And let's not forget, we are 14-15% cheaper than Harris Teeter, so just as a number. So there's quite some difference there that we really have a price advantage, and we come much closer with the shopping experience and the proposition. So there's all room to grow, and we see this also happening. But you have to be very consistent over time, and we see that, for example, pricing, our pricing measurements and our pricing perception is for Food Lion one-on-one. So people buy it now, and I think that's great. That's great work of the team over the last 3 years.
Thank you. We'll do Sridhar and then Nick, please.
Hi, Sridhar Mamgali from Macquarie. Three questions, please. Dick, you've talked a lot about improving price perception in our whole USA market, and Delhaize, you're continuing with Easy, Fresh, and Affordable. As you look forward to 2017, should we be expecting comp sales to accelerate or stabilize around where we are? You've seen a bit of improvement. That's the first question. And second one, you've talked a little bit about price versus Harris Teeter. I'd be interested in knowing where you are and where the gaps are trending versus Walmart for Food Lion and the two giant banners. If you've got a view, that'll be very helpful. And finally, the $1.8 billion CapEx, I'm not asking for 2018 CapEx, but I'm just interested in thinking about the points you made, Frans, about IT and the review that's going on in the background, you'll come back to some views probably mid next year. Can that cover off the 1.8 billion, any potential legacy upgrades you might need to do, including SAP stuff in Europe and that sort of stuff?
Yeah, as Jeff said, by the way, in the CAPEX also this year and next year is quite some heavy lifting on warehousing in, as well in the Netherlands with Bol and Albert Heijn and Deleuze. So that is part of it. So it's also part of extraordinary, in a way, CAPEX we spent. But I think, Jeff, on the CAPEX.
I think if we see the need to spend more, we can spend more. I think we have to have that thought of capital discipline in the back of our heads. But where we see the need to invest in the long-term future and the success of our business, I don't think you'll see anyone on this team deciding not to. And I think the strength of the business that we have can absorb that, you know, and continue with our philosophy in terms of dividends and in terms of how we manage our cash. So if it has to go up in the future because of the need to invest in certain areas, we'll invest. There's absolutely no issue with that.
Your first question was about comp sales, and the second was more about price positioning. I will leave the price positioning of the of Food Lion and Hannaford for Frans. But on the price positioning, I showed you the graph that we improved our EDL positioning clearly in a couple of our markets. If I look simple on our positioning, and then as in most of our markets of the out USA brands, supermarkets are still the number one competitors we have. So less penetration, of course, of Walmart in most of our markets, with exception of Giant Carlisle. Then I would say that in most cases, we are better than all competitors in supermarkets.
So I was very specifically asking Food Lion and the two giants.
But I will take Food Lion with Frans. So if we then look at Food Lion and the two giants, there's clearly a price difference. Food Lion is cheaper than Giant. But if you look at blended, a couple of percentage points, I think, different between Giant and Food Lion currently in the Washington, D.C. market. A couple of percentage points cheaper is Food Lion, because Food Lion is closer to Walmart.
To Walmart, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
So on Food Lion, to give you that data point, as I said, we are double-digit better than Harris Teeter, and by the way, also better double-digit than Publix in our trading areas, just to give you that extra data point for nothing. And the other thing is that if you look at Food Lion, we are measuring what we call the 200 image items, the top price reference articles for our type of customers, and we index equal with Walmart. Also, after the recent price investments of Walmart, we said years ago we invested the 200 basis points with Food Lion, you might remember. Yeah. I said we would like to be priced right, we would like to be consistent for our customers, affordable. So that's what on the price image items. And then you have a group of roughly 2,000 articles where we're indexing 4 or 5% more expensive than Walmart, and the full shop, wall to wall, roughly 10%.
If you then take Harris Teeter and Giant, for instance, Giant is 5% cheaper as Harris Teeter. So then you can also calculate a bit your Food Lion difference between Giant.
Yeah. And sorry, the gap that you're talking about coming to zero, has that happened in Q3? The versus Walmart, the 200 KVIs?
Has been there for years, yeah. Because when we did make the step for 200 basis points, and we know, we all are a couple of years in business. If you would like to get the right price perception for a business, how you would like to position, you have to be very consistent, and you have to be courageous to make the right price investment. And what I said also in previous times, every quarter, we are priced right with our Food Lion. And of course, we measure ourselves also against the Walmart. So that is already for quite some time. But also, I just would like to emphasize that, as you might have heard, there are some price investments from Walmart in the market, that we also still followed them and are priced right also now.
Thank you.
Well, your first question on comparable sales growth for the future of Ahold brands. I said in my presentation, the fourth quarter will cycle to a very difficult quarter, a very good quarter of New York last year, a very fantastic quarter of New York. So we cycle through that. We mentioned that already in our quarterly call. And of course, the plans we have should continue to drive comparable sales growth and volume growth in our markets. That's what the plan is. That's what Northeast is doing. And that should also deliver next year.
Thank you, Nick. Hi, Nick Coulter from Citi. A couple of follow-ups on CapEx, if I may, for Jeff, and then on Aldi, if I may, Dick or Franz. So on CapEx, Jeff,
you can only split down by geography, but could you give a breakdown of CapEx by type, say store refurbs or the like, and specifically IT? And then also, could you comment on the average life since refurbishment, just to get a sense of the state of repair or dilapidation within the different banners of the US portfolio, just to get, again, an idea of the sustainability of the CapEx. And then I think you commented in your presentation about how you'd taken learnings from Europe about how to combat the discounters. Obviously, Walmart is reacting, I think, to Aldi. Could you comment about where Aldi is opening opposite your stalls in the US? And I guess in some of the banners, you have very strong loyalty data that will give you a very good read on the deflections that you see when a discounter, German discounter, opens in your catchments. Thank you.
Just start on CapEx then. You know, we've been busy over the last year. So I can tell you for the ex-Aho businesses, we were running at just under 7 years. And we're pretty comfortable at those levels. And I can also tell you, when I look at the Delhaize businesses, the areas we're investing in are the areas that needed to be invested in. And that's the brave decisions that Pierre and Franz took some time ago to really invest in Food Lion and in Delhaize Belgium. But I haven't yet been able to capture the average life in those areas. That's one for the future, but it's not in our KPI deck at the moment. But I would say it is just under 7 years for the ex Ahold businesses. I think in terms of the type CapEx by type, the vast majority is remodeling. When you look at what we do, we have not been opening a huge number of new stores, except in some areas like Romania, for example. So the average space that we've been adding historically has been relatively low. And where we have added new space, a lot of it has been through M&A. And if you think about the C1000 stores, 80 stores that we acquired in the Netherlands, the Spar acquisition, the AMP stores, the Gennardi stores, a lot of it, and that's not in those numbers. So a lot of that growth is not included in the 1.8. Maybe we should have put that in as well. So the vast majority is remodeling. I'm going to guess at the IT number, but I'd say it's just less than 10%. In terms of CapEx, it's less than 10%.
Yeah, or close to 10%.
Yeah, around. And the rest of it is pretty much focused on remodeling stores. And of course, in 2016, we probably have, and again, I'm going to pull a number out of the top of my head, we probably have close to 200 million in distribution and warehousing spend.
And should we look at that IT as dilapidation, or is that development CapEx that is driving savings out of the business? How do you look at it?
Well, it's a bit of both. It's replacement, it's investment in new technologies, such as e-commerce and digital. It's maintenance of, which sometimes is capital, of older legacy systems.
We did a pretty good study, as a status quo, before we started as two companies together, on where we are on capabilities, investments, all these kind of things. And for this is the basis for a good strategy middle of next year. But we also saw the industry average. And we're reasonably on industry average. And the industry average also says in retail, food retail, if you look at the 100% of IT investments, 60 to 70% is run, and 30 to 40% is change. So that gives you a little bit indication where we are as well. And we have to make our plans now. And like Jeff said, I mean, we have a ROSI requirement, but we also have to lay our cards where we want to be to support also a new type of business in digital e-commerce. And that work is not done yet. So let's wait for that work. And there are savings foreseen in IT, synergy savings, and those are also funding for future as well. And we have not made that total picture yet.
Your first question on Aldi, because we went immediately to CapEx. What we've seen ourselves is, for instance, in the Philadelphia area, where Aldi have revamped quite some stores of previously owned by Delhaize, the bottom dollar stores, you clearly have seen also more activity at Walmart on addressing the price positioning points with them. What you see in general is a bit similar to what you've seen in Europe. Customers in the beginning, first instance, they look at Aldi as an old one out, but they start understanding the quality appearance. And I think that's where Walmart has been investing. Also, that's what we have seen. So we are investing in our price points in guaranteed value. So also to be sure that we are exactly what we learned in Europe, that we have the right quality in our own brands, because that's a real answer, and to create excitement on the fresh side. And that's what the answer should be on every discount. And that's why the learnings from both sides are so important, also with the arrival of Lidl now in the US market. So it is a good learning, and it's very helpful that people from the US can deep dive in what is happening in Europe when you get more discounters. And as I said in my presentation, there is 15 to 20% of the market in the US is discount, so it's not new. It is something what's there be already for a long time. I think Aldi already arrived in the 70s or 80s there. So
your experience is that you're able to combat what they're doing?
Our experiences.
Just
in terms of your experiences at the moment, as they've revamped those stores or lay new space, your activities in terms of addressing lapsed loyals or whatever, you're actually winning those customers back, or you're seeing...
You see that. Your customers are appreciating our offering and our reduced prices. So that's the same for Food Lion, I would say.
I think the experience Dick at Albert Heijn in 2013-14 was not to go head-to-head with Lidl on pricing, but it was the innovation in the range, in the assortment. It was the investments in quality, which have really differentiated and won market share back in the Netherlands, and we're continuing to gain market share in the Netherlands.
Never fight with the same weapons to them. That's the only thing you should know there. You need to answer that. We have an affordable range, but really to focus on innovation and fresh, because that's where you win the battle.
And let's not overestimate this potential new entry. We are, first of all, very well prepared, based on all the learnings we have. Secondly, we're already competing with discount, Walmart being the biggest one, for years. In our Food Lion, interesting number, in our Food Lion geographies, the market share of the Walmart neighborhood stores is bigger than the market share of Aldi. So we're already competing for a long, long, long time with all different formats of Walmart, with dollar stores and with Aldi. So we're used to it, and you have seen from the numbers in a quite dense discount area in the south, we are doing pretty well. So I think we don't underestimate one bit, by the way, but I think we're well prepared.
Thank you very much.
Borja and then Xavier, please.
Borja, JP Morgan. One of the moving parts underpinning the sustainability of the US margin over time should be the ongoing sales density upside opportunity at the less. I remember at the time of the launch of the program, seeing a slide where you pointed out that you were some 30% lower than peers. I was wondering how this gap has been evolving of late and potentially the spread between the number of items per basket and the size of the basket itself.
Frans, you want to take the...
All those exact numbers I don't have in my mind at the moment, but we can deliver them to you. What I can tell is that your memory is absolutely correct, that we were under-indexing on productivity per square foot or sales per door. That's correct. I saw that as an opportunity. That's why we started in investing. And the second thing, what we said is for the remodelings of those stores, Charlotte last year, before that Raleigh and Greenville, Wilmington, we said we would like to grow 12% in 3 years' time. And we are well on that track, and you saw the numbers before, after 1 or 2 years. So we were going to make those numbers. So that means also that the gap we have in productivity towards other retailers is getting narrower, but I do not have exactly, and by basket and whatever the numbers in my mind now, but I think we can help you with some indications. But the gap is getting narrower, but the potential is still there, because we're not there where we want to be.
Thanks, Xavier.
Yes, two questions, if I may, and I will be back on the gross margin, actually. The first one, did you benchmark yourself with the gross margin versus other mergers in the sectors, and where do you stand? Do you think, if so, if you benchmark yourself with whatever merger you've seen in food retail, do you think you achieved better synergies, lower, or in line? First question. And second one is, you said that you will reinvest any extra synergies, but can you give us the area where you want to reinvest these synergies?
Sorry, the last question?
Where would you reinvest? I think on the margin and the amount of synergies relative to other grocery mergers, yes, we've looked at the benchmark. And we think, you know, we took an approach to announce the 500 million to be delivered to the bottom line. That's the approach we took. That's not the approach a lot of other people took. They said we'll get 1.5% of sales, but they never told you where it was going to go or what they did with it. So you could never validate, did it really arrive, or did they just, you know. By being as pure, I think, as we've been, you'll be able to see the synergies and you'll be able to track them as we track them. And that's the 500. We're not, at this stage, it's too early to talk about the upside potential because we'd like to get some track record delivering the 500. So give us a quarter or two. But we do see potential on the upside. And where we invest that, there's plenty of opportunities that we outlined today. I don't know, Dick.
Yeah, I think, Jeff, we gave also some guidelines to the teams. We said, if you create excess money and wait for some quarters before, we would like to be very sure to deliver 500 first, then those who create the excess money have the first go for reinvesting. But we would like to see a good business plan based on the ROCE numbers, and we would like to have focus on top line growth. So that if you reinvest, we would like to grow the top line as a first priority. That's it. That's the agreement with the various brands in our group.
And if you look at our business model, you clearly see where our investments will go: supermarkets, e-commerce, and convenience. So that's where the segmentation is. Geography, we first and foremost focus on the geographies we're in today, because that's where we believe we can still strengthen our positioning. If you look around the US, we still have opportunities there to dance and to even improve our market share positions in quite a lot of our markets. And we have four elements of growth where we clearly believe in our view: personal, digital. I think there's still a lot of investments we can do in creating really a seamless shopping experience for our customers, healthy and fresh, own brands, of course, and at the same time creating an affordable customer shopping for our customers. So that's the investment we will do. And we believe it's a strong strategy for our company.
François, I believe, you?
Yes, hello, François Halkenry from Morgan Stanley. It's actually two follow-up questions. The first one is on the leverage medium term. So now you've set out a new way of thinking about your leverage around 3x according to the S&P methodology. Prior to the PPA adjustment and under the previous methodology, you were around 1.8. And I think your medium-term target was to be around 2x. So in effect, you were allowing yourself to leverage a little bit your balance sheet if needed. Under the new methodology, are you happy in allowing a bit of leverage coming back on your balance sheet, or would you like to stay at around 2x? So that's the first question on the leverage, and then the second one is if you look at what you've given for 2017, so 1.6 billion free cash flow, 1.7 underlying, and the various moving parts to get to that. Should we understand that you're comfortable with the consensus that's been published on your website? So 2.46, I think, for your underlying EBIT for next year, 2.46 billion.
Start on leverage. I think we were pretty clear that we're comfortable around this level of leverage. I think your question was, have we effectively allowed ourselves to deleverage relative to our old ratio? I think you have to look at the reality of the risk of the growth in earnings that we're projecting with the synergies. And I think we have to just be a little cautious about allowing ourselves to increase the leverage based on the fact we're in this is an exciting and a new year that we face in 2017, 18, 19 with considerable margin expansion that we're projecting with the synergies coming to the bottom line. But I think on leverage, the way I think about it is we're comfortable at the current levels. If we went less than 2x, that would be pressure on an upgrade, which we're not really seeking at this stage. We like the flexibility where we're at with a BBB flat rating. I've got no desire to move to a higher rating. That gives us flexibility, and we're comfortable with that. In terms of, I'm not going to get into the comment about EBIT guidance for 2017. It's too early for that. But it's clear what we've said in terms of the 220 incremental EBIT, 200 incremental based on 2017 over 16. And I haven't done the maths, but quickly, if you could add one to the other and do a little bit of growth, you're probably around about the number that you're quoting. So
that's been a first year also.
Thank you.
Andrew? Hey, it's Andrew Gwynn again from Exane, stealing the microphone today. Let's go for a very short-term and a very long-term question. So on the very, very short-term question, at the Q3 trading or Q3 earnings update, there was a bit of ambiguity around the guidance. I think it was 3.6, slightly ahead, slightly behind, blah, blah, blah. help us out, anything more? I suppose connected to that, anything more in the US market, particularly post-Thanksgiving? Do that quickly if you want. Then on the long-term question, better together, that there is a very large bit of water between your businesses. If we think about a long-term view of the business, does it make more sense to be a US and then a separate European business?
Should I take the outlook first?
Fine.
I think we've been very clear, and I hope it's been clear today, that we're estimating that we'll come in at 3.6 for the year. That includes the 20 million that we're now saying on the synergies, and that's a 10 basis points increase year on year, which I think is a good performance. The quarter by quarter, you know, we can get hung up by individual quarters. We had a strong quarter four last year, and we had a strong quarter one this year in 2016, obviously helped by the 53rd week in quarter four. Also, I think a very strong performance in Southeast Europe in quarter four last year. But I think it's been very clear, 3.6, which is a 10 basis points year-on-year improvement, and we expect to see margin improvement again next year. And with the deflationary environment, I think that's a strong statement.
Yeah, and long-term better together is more than only Deleuze and Ahold. It is also two continents, scale of the two companies on both sides of the ocean, bringing the skill set together. The capabilities we have, sharing that also from a US and a European perspective, I think makes us also unique. And that's why Better Together is not only the fact that Ahold Deleuze, but it's also two continents, clear companies and clear brands around the globe. And we benefit from knowing from each other and learning from each other a lot. So I think that's what is the mission of our company, and the purpose is we build great local brands. So that's what we do on both sides of the ocean.
Okay, that's clear. Just sort of while we're on M&A, you've always talked about small-scale M&A. Is that still on the agenda?
Yeah, for sure. But on the other hand, also today, we are focusing much more on our integration roadmap, which takes most of our time, of course, away in the first year when we start working together, and next year certainly too. But it doesn't say that we are not looking at M&A opportunities. Because if they make sense and they fit into our framework, they fit into our geographies, they really create also a good return for our shareholders, we will continue to look at it. But first of all, foremost, finish what we do today is working on the integration, because we feel very much focus of the organization is the best we can do, and also delivering shareholder value for you.
Thank you, Philippe.
Yes, Philippe Suchet from Natixis. Just a question about your commercial strategy. Can you remind us the level of your sales achieved under promotions in your main banners? And also in the future, do you want to change this positioning? Would you go more EDLP on some banners, or would you make a consistent policy compared to what you did earlier?
I think it depends from market to market. If you look at our promotion shares, it's really different in the markets we operate. The Netherlands, close to 20, around 20, Belgium even a bit lower. So markets are, let's say, from a promotion point of view, also different from a perspective of our customers. If I look at the US, our business also have different promo shares. So if you look at the old Ahold USA, close to 40% of promo share, where I think Hannaford is more in the line of 25, and lower even. So you see, let's say, from a historic perspective, it's built differently. Hannaford doesn't have even a loyalty card today. They start working now on it because they were strong believer it's the price which is the most important thing you give to your customers. Now, is that closer to each other? Is the world changing? The Americans certainly will not change. They are promotion driven, so they will never change. The balance of promo versus EDL, I think that over time might change. But I don't think Hannaford is happy where they are, and I think we also happy where they are. So.
But also the Hannaford model, very rigorous in the previous years on EDLP, that also has become a little bit more hybrid model, because also customers would like to get a bargain, and they have their wow prices, and they also get some small promotion share in. Same for for banners which are very high on promotion. Customers also like to make sure that they can trust the shelf prices as well. So it's always a balance. It's a more hybrid type of thing, what you see more coming. And on the Ahold side, one of the learnings, I think, for the Delhaize banners is that the way Ahold runs their promotions, and especially also in the Dutch market, I think in Belgium we can take some good learnings out of this in the way it's done, it's presented, it's merchandised. So I think that's one of the other best practices and good wins. And you will see this in Belgium coming in 2017.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Arnaud Joly, Sergen, I have three questions. Two on bol.com. We know that it's often difficult for a non-food generalist pure player to fight against Amazon. Do you have any evidence that Amazon wants to be more aggressive in the Netherlands and to expand its business? And can you provide some flavor on bol.com price positioning, I mean, versus competitors offline and online, and for the core business, not for the marketplace? And last question, if I remember well, you expect limited synergies in logistics. Is there any opportunity to launch a more ambitious program in the US to reorganize logistics in the coming few years? Thank you.
Annika, we take Bol and France take supply chain.
Sure. On bol.com, I won't comment on Amazon too much, but no doubt you've seen that they have translated their Amazon.de, so their German website, into Dutch in September. So that may indicate they will get a little more serious about the Dutch market. Still fairly rudimentary. So Prime doesn't work in Holland. Some of the translations not great. So we'll see. But they may get more, you know, interested in the market over time. In terms of pricing, bol.com has very competitive prices, and I think I'll stick with that.
Supply chain in the US, I think, of course, in retail, a very interesting topic, not only for synergies and costs, but also in the quality of transportation, effect on working capital, days of freshness, and so on. It's also, at the same time, quite complex, the partnerships and the third-party vendors we work with, the DCs we operate in the various geographies, and we have to also get aligned with the new store network after the FTC. So all these kind of things are now in the working group, there's now full exchange of data, and the data is not that long available because we are just close to transaction, as you know, and that group will come in the first quarter of next year with a clear advice how we should get organized ourselves. And that will be a mix of stores, performance, freshness, working capital, forecasting and replenishment, use of the existing network, which warehouses can be optimized and can be used better and utilized, which third-party vendor relations can be extended. All these kind of things are in that working group. And that's why it's also great that we started now this retail business services, where both supply chain teams come now together and work now together side and side, shoulder and shoulder, to find the best solution for our overall business.
And I'd just like to add as well, one of the exciting opportunities is not just looking at the 500 million synergies and what's in that and delivering on those. It's looking at all of those areas, like supply chain, where we think there's more opportunity, which we will get to, we're working on. But if you look at some of the great work that's been done on both sides that we can learn from each other, I think the potential of that is fantastic. Yeah. And I think about the work we've been working on in the last 3 or 4 years in terms of how we optimize assortment, also how we do promotional optimization in terms of analyzing the return on each individual promotion activity. And talking to as I think we mentioned in the presentation, the leaders of our businesses talking to each other and taking those learnings, whether it's in supply chain or in other areas, taking those learnings and delivering on those learnings, I think gives us much more potential in the longer term than just the 500 synergy number, which is specific projects which we've identified, but there's a lot more that we can do over a lot longer period of time.
And these kind of, I think Jeff is 100% right, so these kind of things, those initiatives have not been quantified, but there's so much fantasy, we rather have to prioritize where we're going to work on, because there's plenty of things going on, and Americans love their wines and love their European cheeses, and there is a big market for Italian products. Guess what? We have a big foothold in Europe. We have a strong foothold in the US. Another big opportunity to do even a better job than we do now already with those imports. So there's plenty of opportunity to create value for customers to start with, and that also will be very beneficial for our total company. So we have to be selected now in the fantasies, yeah. More or less.
Yeah. Well, exactly. There's only so much that can be done in the next year or so.
And just one follow-up to clarify, the 1 billion euros of share buyback, it is in 17.
Yeah, correct.
Correct. Okay. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning. Philippe Horsen from MUFG. Two questions, if I may. The first one for Jeff. It has been a while since the legacy Ahold and Dale Hayes companies have tapped the debt capital markets. Given the context of rising interest rates in the U.S., any desire to establish a dollar curve? Second question is for both Dick and Frans, and is a little bit more a longer-term question. If we look at the unexpected election outcomes in the UK, in the United States, a move towards more populism in Europe, does that mean that globalization is finished and that actually may enter a period of deglobalization? And if so, what could that mean for a food retailer like Ahold Delhaize? Thank you.
Well, first of all, on the debt capital markets, yes, there is a likelihood that we'll be more active going forward in 17 and 18. So you saw on the debt profile chart that we put up that we will be retiring more debt over the next 2 or 3 years. And I get the sense from the audience that further deleveraging isn't really something that we will, you know, we're already pretty light on in terms of leverage. So we probably will look at more refinancing of that debt as we retire it. So there's a good chance we will be coming back into those markets, and I'm sure we'll be looking at good pricing when we do.
And on globalization and, let's say, deglobalization, if you would say in this way, Brexit or elections in different markets, I think what you see, in a sense, everywhere in the world, there is a concern about the influx of the outside. So mostly to do with immigration. That's the reason I think Brexit is there, not because of the economic situation. It's more about the immigration risk, and the same, I think, was driven in the US. So that's not per se, I think, that global trade is gone. There will be different layers, maybe, as clearly the new president in the US, the to-be-elected president, will have been announcing. On the other hand, for us, and that's also exactly where I think our strategy is fitting nicely in, we are trying to make ourselves local, and we are local. So our brands are local, and in food, you mostly source local. So in a way, we are a local company with a global scale. And I think if we can use that in the best way forward, we are at the right spot at this moment with maybe the so-called and maybe felt more anti-globalization. And I think that makes us also nice to have these global company with local brands. So. Okay, that's my answer. Maybe, Frans, you want to add something on it?
I think not that much to add, Dick. And I think if you look back at all the big retailers worldwide, their network in the past and where they are now, a number of countries, and everybody internationalized a lot. I think we see the charm of getting stronger shares locally in our markets, and that relative market share matters. And that's why for this we are perfectly positioned. And for this we are very differently operating than all those international cross-border food mergers in the past, which were differently successful, yes or no, and I think we're excellently positioned here. And if you look at there were a few examples there, North Carolina, the Food Lion customers would like to buy with their Patterson brands, Patterson Farms in North Carolina, and that I think that is still a little bit effect of this globalization stuff, that people retract a little bit more in their local markets, employment, taste, ethnicity, and I think we're perfectly positioned for this. So I think we're in the right spot, in the sweet spot.
That, ladies and gentlemen, seems like a perfect point to conclude the Q&A session, if I may. Dick, would you be kind enough to wrap up and close the meeting?
Yeah, I would like to thank my colleagues also for contributing today. So first of all, thanks Jeff, Frans, and Hanneke was a great, let's say, introducing the new company today. I think, I hope at least you felt our journey, although started already a year ago, is continuing. We feel confident about the future of our companies going forward. You've seen our enthusiasm about this journey. I think in a lot of cases, we see even more coming out of our journey together than we saw in the beginning when we first had our meeting, France, in April last year. The companies are really made for each other, so that's also something I think we all have shown. And that's why it brings me to the concluding remarks in a way. Well positioned to win in all our local markets, because that's exactly what it should be. We are local, we're close by. We are using our international scale to build great local brands, and that's what it's all about. And Frans just said, we are local on one hand, where the customers feel their mothers and their grandparents were shopping, and we are still there. And that makes us also strong from a perspective on the localizing. But at the same time, with the digitalization, with the e-commerce, with own brands development, we are looking what a global scale can bring us as a global retailer. Driving costs to savings to invest for our customers, Jeff gave great examples. And it doesn't stop with that. There are so many nice examples. And it has to do with the mentality. That's why our business wheel is so important to understand for our associates, that that's the way of doing retail over the last 100 years. To fund growth in our key channels so that we're able to continue to invest. And we are investing heavily in our fleets, as you know. The integration, Frans mentioned very clear, we are on track, we're doing the right things, we get the enthusiasm on the people, on our organization to work together, and even from a culture perspective, a lot of stories always out about the Dutch and the Belgians, but this is an American merger, on one hand, because we are big on both sides, and of course we have some Dutch, Netherlands, Belgium things to work on, but that's not what it is, it's really an international merger. And we feel confident about that, all of us. And a balanced approach between funding our growth and then returning cash, we also clearly made that to you. Jeff Clave clearly also restated the outlook. We feel this year is a good year. If you look at we from 3.5% to 3.6, 10 basis points more, of course, with a big merger. One of the things Frans and myself said when we started the whole journey, two things are important. Not only the fact that we make this merger work, but also that our business continues to perform. And one thing you have seen over the last year is that we continuously were able to run our business as well. And that's a big compliment to our organization, to our 375,000 people around the globe and our leadership. And that makes me so proud to be here, to stand here in this beautiful boys' school, because that is, and I'm very happy we have a lot of ladies here today in this boys' school, which we could rent for a reasonable price.
The ladies or the boys?
And we're not paying even. I think we pay also. We paid already, maybe. Okay. So thank you, Toby, in the back, for having us here today. We really enjoyed your hospitality, and I hope you enjoyed our journey and our discussion with you. You've got a lot of information, I wish you all a very good end of the year, a good holiday, enjoy some relaxation during Christmas and New Year. We do the same. Thank you. Not our stores, by the way. Thanks a lot. Then.